Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Awin mawa, awin mawa, awin mawa, awin mawa, awin mawa.
something happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures
pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, it's old King Shaziz the Terrible here, along with the Honorable Knights. I'm working on a new configuration of a system here, and so with that said, hopefully this will work a little bit better than it did last go. So, hello guys, are you guys there?
I'm here.
All right, we got Thomas Anderson, so far we got Steve Hope. Who else we got in here?
I'm free.
Yay. All righty then. Well, like I said, we got a new configuration going on as far as how this whole scenario is going. We got you guys on one computer and piped into another computer, and so, you know, maybe we can get this situated. Anyway, so those folks of you out there in the chat room, if you have any audio level problems, give me a holler and let me know. So, anything new in the alternative energy world for you guys, or any new things you want to bring to the table? Yeah. No.
Sorry, I can't quite do a Bruce Willis.
You need that cricket sound, man.
Well, that's why I was kind of in there.
Chirp. So how's over there in, where are you at there again, Steve? Boy, I keep forgetting it's either Thailand or Singapore, that's what it was.
It's east of Eden.
East of Eden, all right. Well, how's that gardening thing going over there on that side?
Not very well, because I'm east of Eden, and I've got a 200-foot square roof terrace 50 feet above the ground, so I'm not happy.
Oh, well, hey, at least you're up a little high enough you shouldn't be getting a smog in your face.
Unfortunately, there is a bit of an issue in the Singapore region at the minute with the haze.
Ah.
Which is basically slash and burn in Indonesia, Borneo, parts of Malaysia, all over Central Asia. There's a lot of people that are slashing and burning native forest lands to plant palm oil, or palms that produce oil. And that means that we get a thick smog in the city where you have to walk around with a face mask on like Michael Jackson.
Well, that stinks. That's pardon the pun.
Well, it does stink, but it stinks of burn something.
Yeah.
But the problem is the volatile organic compounds that are released by burning these forests. If you want to take the opinion of the Singapore government, they have ratings of levels, and once the level gets above 100, it's unhealthy. Once it goes above 200, it's dangerous. And once it gets above 300, you don't go outside.
Man. See, now I don't understand people's ways of thinking, you know. If you're going to be living in the general vicinity or have some neighbors that might be living next to some place where you're fixing on working or messing around with nature, why don't you just use some common sense, you know? there's a deal where these guys who do logging, they go out and they plant a whole bunch of trees on one side while they're cutting down trees on the other side, so they're at least making the attempt to balance nature out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, it comes down to the fact that if you cut down the world's lungs, it's hardly surprising if everybody comes down with respiratory illnesses.
Oh, yeah.
You can't breathe.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, they keep banging on about CO2. We'll stop cutting the jungle down.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, put some, like I said, balancing it out. You know, these big companies that go out there and do this mass fishing and stuff, you know. I mean, you can't just keep on raping and pillaging the ocean and expect that, you know, things aren't going to, you know, work out right. I mean, if you eventually you're completely out of tuna and you kill off the entire species, then you ain't getting no tuna for dinner.
Yeah, you know? that's kind of that whole, you know, keep them running on the hamster wheel so fast that basically they can't keep track of what's going on one way or another. So the only thing they can really spend time paying attention to is, you know, what's the bottom line? What's the bottom of their balance sheet looking like? Oh no. We're going to go to jail if we don't have enough money to pay these taxes and pay for this and pay for that, and we'll lose our place to live and everything else. Catch some more. Just keep catching. Catch everything you can, you know.
Yeah. Could I just give people the benefit of my personal experience?
Yeah.
I wouldn't call myself a tree hugger, but in 1991 I did go to Wales with a bunch of hippies and druids, and we tried tree hugging in the nude.
Ah!
Now, I have to say that Dutch elm is okay, but don't try it with a rough bark.
Man, I was just entirely too much information. I got a bad visual on that whole thing right there. I'm going to need therapy.
I thought I was the only one. I'm glad to know I'm not.
Well,
gentlemen, I would like to point out that young people can be impressionable, but they can benefit from the experience of people that are maybe a few years older. That's where I'm coming from.
Well, I understand all that, but after that visual, I'm permanently traumatized, you know.
Well, in fairness, Shaziz, your appropriate way to react to global warming was quite disturbing in itself.
Yeah, you know, sometimes a man's got to do what a man's got to do, and you have to go to extremes in order to try to get your point across. And believe me, that day was really extreme because it was nice and cold outside.
Well, they say don't knock it till you've tried it, and I think between us we've tried most things that are legal.
Yeah. So, you know, common sense, man, that's all I'm saying is, you know, if you go out there and you stand on a hill out away from a city, you can look down and you can literally see the black crud that's just kind of lingering around down there. And I'm like, man, why would people even want to live in that city? And then you go stand on another hill, look out off into the country, and it just clears all get out, you know? So that would be the first indication that if you're going to clog up the atmosphere that you're living in, you're probably going to have a few respiratory problems. You know what I mean?
Well, this evening, as I said, I'm on the fifth floor. Each floor is roughly 10 foot high. And our actual roof terrace is on technically the sixth floor, because it's a maisonette. So you've got, like, the apartment downstairs with a roof terrace above. So 60 feet above ground, we're still looking at a blood red sun. And I don't know if people know too much about light spectrums, but whatever chemicals are in the atmosphere will reflect through light. Even when they're looking at planets at vast distances, they can roughly gauge what sort of elements are on that planet by the light spectrum that's reflected back. I mean, we were talking about noble gases before.
Yeah.
You know, your xenon gases, your argon gases, they all give out a different light spectrum.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at the sunset and you've got a blood red sun, God knows what chemicals are in the atmosphere between yourself and that dirty great big ball of explosive nuclear matter.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
it's something to seriously consider.
Either way, yeah. if you're going to be in the fishbowl, it might be a good idea to try to keep your fishbowl clean. I'm just saying.
Don't kill off those critters that basically clean the walls of that glass, you know, and keep all the algae at bay so you don't end up basically choking on it.
Yeah.
It's a balance. Balance is there for a reason.
So, you know, anyway. Moving right along, I'm not necessarily one of those who think that nature isn't in control. I understand nature's more powerful, but people got to understand that even though nature's more powerful than humans, what you do in your local vicinity is what you're going to have to. You know, if you're in your fishbowl, you're going to have to swim in whatever's in that water, regardless, you know, until nature gets around to cleaning up your mess. And so, with that said, it would be a good idea.
Because when nature cleans the mess up, she tends to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, exactly. that's kind of the point I was trying to get to. But, yeah, you're going to be the baby going out with the bathwater, and so you might want to try to use a little wisdom. And, you know, if you're going to have local creeks around your local waterways, around your deal, you might not want to be emptying your transmission or your radiator fluid down there on the ground where it's going to seep into your water supply and all that kind of stuff. You know, when you start seeing your fish floating down the creek instead of swimming, then you may want to recognize that as a possible red flag that you're not working in harmony with nature, so to speak.
Well, I don't see Larry on at the minute. Oh, he hasn't joined us. But Larry was telling us the last couple of weeks about graphene in itself. Graphene apparently has a smaller crystalline structure than asbestos.
Well, it's definitely a concern worth checking into to make sure. I don't necessarily want to throw that portion out until, you know, the research is ending or anything. But yeah, when you're talking about it being as fine as it is, I would like to, you know, seriously, you know, keep an eye on taking a look at that, because that could seriously be a health hazard. You know, just along the same lines of RF frequency.
Right. Does anybody here know why, you know, what the deal is of why asbestos is so bad for you?
I only think because of the synthetic and the size of the fiber itself that, you know, it's like fiberglass.
So it's not synthetic. It's not synthetic.
Well, either way, not the carbon portion, but the fiberglass portion of it, you know.
No, I'm saying that asbestos is not synthetic. It's actually a natural stone-like material that forms in the ground. It's made out of silica.
And
I can tell you why it's so dangerous.
What I was trying to get at is the way that fiberglass. If you've ever been around fiberglass, you know it's got like little tiny particles of and that stick in your skin. Well, the same thing with the way that asbestos works. Even though it's not a synthetic.
Right. Okay. See, you got part of it, but let's take a step further. Okay, asbestos is not only it's not only fibrous, but it's hollow, which means it's incredibly light. And, I mean, those two things in and of themselves wouldn't really be dangerous, but then you have to look at the fact that asbestos is covered in little tiny crystalline sharp barbs that cut and slice into anything that basically it lays in on. So it does not migrate. Once it's in your lungs, it just lays on the cells and keeps slicing them up. And the cells keep trying to fix themselves. They don't try to. They do. They do repair themselves over and over again. And at some point, because you're a vessel of trillions of cells, the statistical anomaly of, you know, even like one in, you know, a million chance that you're going to have a cell that's going to become cancerous is no longer a possibility. It's a guarantee point. Because what your cell is doing is it's trying to find a way to mutate in order to deal with this irritant that's constantly killing the other cells off.
Yeah, I pointed out like the way that the doggone oyster makes a pearl. You know, whenever an oyster doesn't have a tongue, that it can spit out a piece of sand when it gets flushed up in there. And so its immune system begins to attack that and starts to coat it, which eventually ends up to be a pearl, kind of the same way that anything
right.
that ain't supposed to be in the body ends up being coated by your...
Well, and you know what? That's a perfect point, because occasionally people get cysts, and they can't figure out why they got a cyst, and it's actually because their body is essentially doing about the same thing you're describing there.
Yeah.
Rather than just trying to up the ante on... how fast it can and it can replicate. There's another issue too, though. The cells only have so many times they're allowed to replicate. They have a plan built into the genetic code that says, okay, when we hit this last regeneration, you don't get to regenerate anymore. And in many cases, because you're wearing it out by causing this advanced replication in an area, the cells will try to take a shortcut. And unfortunately, when they do that, usually what ends up happening is, if they succeed at getting the shortcut, they also break the mechanism, their little GPS that tells them where they're supposed to grow, and then you've got cells that just start growing all over the place. And I mean, you think about it, if your bones didn't know, the cells in your bones did not know where they were supposed to grow, and they just grew anywhere they wanted, how long would it be before your skeletal structure would never no longer work as a skeletal structure?
Yeah.
See? So, but you know, again, it's the light... tuberous, microscopic, covered in blades sticking off it in all directions, nature of the asbestos that makes it so dangerous. Even nanotube structures don't have this, unless they're engineered to have it, and we really don't have the technology for doing any of this stuff yet. We will eventually, because we're going to need it in order to make, you know, microcircuitry and stuff like that. But, you know, everybody is... terrified of asbestos, but the fact is there's tons of asbestos that is considered safe to use because you can't breathe it. It's basically trapped inside of something that will not go away without destroying the asbestos, the crystalline structure of it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so with all that said, the concerns about graphene, I agree that it needs to definitely be kept an eye on, and with every chemical that you use, you should always exercise the best of caution in order to ensure mm-hmm. that, you know, you don't put it in your mouth but don't belong there, kind of thing, you know.
Don't breathe it.
Yeah, don't breathe it in. And but I still like that the fact that graphene has the potential for nanotechnology to, you know, for instance, pick up radiant energy and such. So, you know, I don't want to really necessarily throw that one out the window just yet, but I do want to point out that there has been some caution that needs to be addressed there.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a question, Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
After, say you make graphene paint, mm-hmm. does it eventually break down and the graphene get back into the atmosphere?
I think it depends on what you use as your body to, you know, because basically all paint is a pigment and a body. And then when it starts out, it's also got like a BCC or some other substance that basically allows it to remain liquid. So, you know, it really just depends on what you have it tied into and how it chemically locks with the graphene. I imagine it does at some point, but what comes out of it is so tiny and so insignificant. I mean, your body can basically, it's a carbon component. This is the last leg that needs to be looked at. Asbestos is made of silicon. Our bodies are not made of silicon. They're made of carbon.
Right.
The primary building block is carbon. Graphene is a loose configuration of carbon atoms. They're just basically hexane or... benzene rings that just keep, you know, replicating over and over and over again in a constant sheet. So I would guess that if you do get any graphene in your system, just like breathing a little tiny bit of resin from, like, you know, if you're sanding on some epoxy or something, your body is going to eject most of it, but some of it may actually break down and just use it.
Well, I'd also like to point out, too, that plants, you know, scrub the carbon off of CO2, so it could very well be potentially that, if it does, because it is carbon-based, it's going to be heavier than oxygen and all that, and it's going to fall as opposed to, float up into the atmosphere. You know, any fine dust is going to float up to some extent, but we're still talking.
Right. Let's tackle that.
Steve, let me capture this before it's no longer on people's minds. You talk about the dust, okay? Graphene, we've already proven, is really good at holding electrons. Okay?
Yeah.
So if you're going to be working with dust from graphene, what my suggestion would be is make sure you've got a really, really good ionizer. Not just an air filter, but have an ionizer pumping ions into the air, because it will basically weight down the dust itself. And that's how an ionizer basically clears the air, is it weights down and reverses the charge so it's attracting to the ground any dust particles that are floating around in the air.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan, and you can get them ionizers all over the place.
Right. So I would suggest something, a good one, like I said, a Honeywell or something like that, that can, take care of the volume of air that you have in the area you're going to be in, and keep that thing set on, medium or low, so it's always pumping tons of ions into the air and keep the air clean. Yeah. I would do it anyway, because the dust that you're breathing right now, if you look at the sun ray and the light shining through the window and you see the little dust particles floating around that you can't get away from, those are carcinogenic too.
Yeah, well, that's, and everybody's always wondering why people have breathing problems and all that. Some of the materials that they build the houses out of these days, and the dust that just kind of comes in when you open your window or you flag your door or whatever, it's hard telling what you're dragging in and out of your house.
Well, I can tell you right now, 90% of that dust is basically deionized or possibly charged particles of burnt-up meteors. And not all of that's iron. There's all kinds of other crap that's in that whenever it falls to the earth and burns up in the atmosphere on the way in.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for sure. I wouldn't mind having a few meteors land in my yard, as long as they only dig like a pond or something like that, instead of a crater that's 30 miles wide or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't wish for meteors, because the dinosaurs got a meteor and they didn't like it.
Well, I don't want them that big. I just want them in the $30,000 and $50,000 range, because, you can sell the things. And I'll get a pond dug at the same time, so it's a win-win on my side. As long as it don't hit the house.
It is. There was a meteorite that it just outside Mexico City recently that left a 3-meter crater.
Man.
But if you're looking for a pump, I mean, that's an easy way to dig it.
Somebody add Muddy to the call. He's killing me.
I've been trying to get it in. Guys, I did want to bring us back to the whole asbestos thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because from the gardening perspective, there is a chemical called, well, not a chemical, but a compound called vermiculite.
There we go.
All right, Steve's now, talking. Go on, Steve.
Vermiculite is a hydrosilicate material that's artificially produced, and it's mined in Russia, South Africa, China, and Brazil mostly, but it is present in other places. But 1% of vermiculite is naturally occurring asbestos.
So
that makes sense.
So would
now, as you said, not all asbestos is detrimental to human health. But once they start processing it, basically what they're doing with this is they mold shapes, because they can put potassium into it as well. Potassium, nitrogen, and phosphate are the three key elements that grow plants. So it's really good for growing plants, but at the same time, do you really want to be putting asbestos, whether it's natural or manufactured, into your food system? So I just wanted to give a quick warning out there to people that when they buy vermiculite, you have to understand that it does contain some risk to actually use it, and you need to inform yourself. It's not for me to tell you what you should or shouldn't use, but what I'm saying is this is something that you should personally research if you want to put it into your food supply.
Yeah, well, I don't want to eat an asbestos sandwich.
you don't like Sir Wool either, then, do you?
No.
Don't want no Sir Wool burger?
Uh-huh.
Vermiculite is brilliant for growing food, believe me. As especially if you're in a hot environment, because it will soak up and retain water. As you were saying, asbestos has a hollow structure. Vermiculite in itself as well is a form of clay with a, was it a tetrahedral and octahedral structure. So when water gets inside it, it tends to be retained by it.
Right.
In fact, vermiculite was used in Holland. They used to peel bulbs, lily bulbs, every October, and they'd put it in vermiculite and stick it in the freezer for 6 weeks, and it would form roots from that.
Mm.
Most people don't realise tulips are not a Dutch plant, they come from the Turkish mountains. Being a mountainous plant, they need a temperature of around about minus 20 degrees Celsius for roughly 6 weeks to produce a good crop the next year, because it's part of its life cycle.
Man. Minus 20 Celsius sounds cold, man. What is that in Fahrenheit?
It's a brass monkey advertising for an arc welder.
Oh, well, I don't want to. I don't want to go anywhere where it's cold, so maybe I need to learn, when I come over to visit you guys in your neck of the woods, I need to learn the difference of between Fahrenheit and the other measuring deal, so I'm going to get a jacket, because if it says it's going to be like 60 out there, you know, that's cold to me.
Well, if you read what they say on Wikipedia, which is taken with a pinch of salt, once they cure it at a temperature of 180 degrees Celsius for 24 hours, such parts can withstand service temperatures of up to 1,150 degrees Celsius.
Holy smokes.
And are often used in the aluminium smelting industry as backup insulation behind the carbon cathode in the pot cells, which contain molten mixtures of cryolite and alumina.
Man.
But a lot of people have vermiculite in their homes as insulation.
Mm.
Well, I guess
you're locked into it then, otherwise they're going to be breathing it.
I met a guy with asbestos lung way back in the late 80s, early 90s. And the guy was dying because he's this fibrous growth that's growing through and destroying his lung.
Man.
Once you breathe that stuff, it's only a matter of time. But the thing is it's one of these things that takes 20 or 30 years to kill you.
Right.
There was this cartoon one time that had this guy named Asbestos the Firewalker. Is that relevant to this conversation?
Well, there was always this joke when I was growing up, Chiz, is that if you want to be a bad man, you want to make sure you got some asbestos underpants, because you're not going up when you die.
Ah. Oh, man. Yeah, I just seen that whole thing play out. So we got Muddy in here. Muddy, did you have something you want to contribute there, or are you just joining in?
I don't know. I had a hard time finding chat.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, this new system seems to be working out fine, so thanks for helping me set that up. For everybody out there who hasn't got a clue what I'm talking about, we have, Muddy helped me set up a Linux system, the Lubuntu version, and so that's what I'm running Skype on right now, and I got it hardwired straight across to the other side, so it's working out pretty doggone well, man.
You're welcome. Yeah, during shift change, I'm watching the clock and watching audio levels, and basically I tell everybody in the house to get quiet, and the chat called me right at shift change, and I'm sitting there hearing it's covering the screen on things I need to click, and I was like, so I declined it, and that meant it didn't show up over here in Skype as one of my deals there, because I rejected it. It wouldn't show if somebody typed in there. But anyway, yeah, we spent about four or five hours one night and 2 hours another, and played with it and actually broadcasted with it.
Yeah, we spent pretty much the whole day on it that one day, but like I said, I'm thoroughly impressed with the system and the software, and I've been telling everybody and his brother, you know, look into it, because this computer that this Skype is on, it's a turkey, you know, and... Heck, it works better than the one I got with my Windows on there. And it's
young lady loves Facebook on it.
Yeah, It's working real good because now Sam can run independent without having to worry about any issues as far as memory issues, and Vince has been really stable. But if you guys out there need a computer or something together, get that software that Muddy is talking about, the Lubuntu right there, and put it on a flash drive. You always have a backup.
I got a version. We got a laptop over here to the right that's got a bad hard drive on it. Won't even move, won't nothing. We tested the hard drive. It's kabooey. But stuck a thumb drive in the side of it with Linux Mint on it. And it runs great off the thumb drive and using the memory. And I figure, for $8 for a thumb drive and a free version of an operating system, an old junk computer becomes something that works like new.
Well,
I was going to say, a flash drive isn't much different than a solid-state drive, you know, the SSD drives that everybody's going gaga over. In fact, you get more cycles off, but it's not as fast as the SSD drives, but it's more stable. The drive, the SSD drives eventually burn themselves out. So,
well, all I can say is I'm thoroughly impressed with the doggone thing because he took that turkey computer and made it a supercomputer. And so if anybody's out there got some computer problems and they don't really necessarily like Windows and all that, I'm going to keep Windows for, you know, programs that need Windows. But as far as running all the rest of this stuff, heck, I had no problem. It found all my software, all my hardware. It found my internet and everything. It's just really impressive what these guys in that community of working on that software have accomplished. I mean, it's incredible. And I can't say enough about it, but either way.
Yesterday I did three radio shows in a row with the basically with the Skype on that one with the thumb drive in it.
Yeah, so folks out there, if you got you got an old computer that you're fixing to hit, throw out there to the curb, don't do that just yet. Go out there and check out that Lubuntu software. It's a version of Linux, and you know it's free software. And if you know how to program, help folks out and do that shareware thing or whatever. But
I think anybody can do it. You get a program called UnetBoot. I don't care what system it is. You got one for Linux and you got one for Windows. And you click on it, open it up, you go to the top. All you got to do is put a thumb drive in the side of the computer. Make sure you got all the other thumb drives undone so you don't get the wrong thumb drive copied to. Basically, you go up to the top, scroll down, whatever. There's hundreds of different kinds of Linux that you want. There's even one called Damn Small Linux, DSL. There's Puppy Linux that barks and stuff. It's pretty cool, but it basically runs off. You can run it off the thumb drive or install just like any operating system. You pick your version of whichever one you pick on the right. Hit the button. It makes a bootable thumb drive. You start your computer. Stick the thumb drive inside of the computer you want to run or install to. Start the computer. When it gets up to that first screen that says Dell or whatever, you hit F2 and it takes you to the bootloader menu, and you put the USB first. Let it boot up. Usually it'll show, let it go on default, and it'll show whatever version you got, and you can play around with it and test it. And it's not installed or it doesn't touch your hard drive yet. Then there's an icon in the upper left. You double click on it, and it's the one to install. And it just installs it, and now you got a new system on your computer. Pretty decent, pretty easy. Anyone can do it.
Yeah, my lady is really thoroughly impressed because, like you mentioned there earlier, as far as the going on Facebook, I hate going on Facebook on a regular laptop or regular Windows computer because they just cram so much stuff in there that it just bogs your system down. And this one right here, I mean, she just walks right through it, man. She loves this thing to pieces. So you made a friend in her on that, brother.
Yeah, I saw the graphics on that thing, man. That thing is moldy.
I would like to point out that in 2009, after I was made redundant in Ireland, I was sent to college because they wanted to get me off the unemployment list. But when we went to college, the course I was doing in college was networking and web design. And everything we did in that college
was on a memory stick, and it was using DSM, damn small Linux.
Yeah.
It's a 5 megabyte installation. It's a bare-bones system.
Yes, sir.
But on the back of that, you can run a suite of utilities that allow you to design websites offline.
Cool. Hey, Maddie.
Now, 2 days ago, I went and bought myself a new computer, because the last one I built was in 2008, and it was time for an upgrade. And it's got Windows 8.1 on it. And there's a couple of questions that I'd like to ask an open question to Microsoft. Why the hell would I need to log into your website to use a calendar?
Hey, buddy.
Seriously.
You got a question in the chat room, buddy. Clear Angel was trying to understand what it was you were saying. Let me scroll up there. I'm not fast as I was. Clear Angel said, please say that again. What was the drive one needs to click on first? I guess...
Okay. You download a program called UNetBootin. UNetBootin. Download it. Here's one for Windows, Macs, and Linux. The Linux is the tar. Well, if you don't have Linux, then you don't have to worry about that. Go get your Windows one. Install it. Start UNetBootin. Get a thumb drive. Stick it in the side of your computer. Make sure all other thumb drives with memory or anything are unplugged so you don't get confused. It's an easy thing to do at first. Okay? At the top of the window, you'll see version or OS system or whatever, the first button that you'll see. And you click on it, opens up, and it opens up a whole bunch of different versions. And you can choose from that, and then there's another drop-down menu to the right that shows you the newest version, or you can pick through live or net install or whatever, 14.02, 14.04, 0.1, but whatever, you click the newest version or whatever you think is good. Lubuntu is a lightweight Ubuntu, and that works real good on 32-bit systems, and hit it, and pick your little version, and usually the newest version works better, so you hit it, and go down to the bottom, and pick, it says USB drive or hard drive, you put USB drive, and then you click, click the go button, and there she goes. It makes a bootable thumb drive out of that thumb drive. You stick it in the side of a computer, whichever one you want to use, and you stick it in there, start your computer, and when it gets to your first screen there where it says the brand or computer that you got or whatever, all you have to do is press your F2 key. Sometimes it's the escape key or F8 or F7, and it goes to your boot page. Doggone, I can't get it out. Anyway, it goes to your boot order, and you move USB up, and you hit save, and basically all it's going to do is boot it up for you, and from there on, you got it. You can install it off the icon if you like it.
Hey, buddy, would you mind, Clear Angel put email address in the chat room over there at Awake Radio and wanted to know if maybe you could email the instruction to her.
Oh, she's this.
Yeah.
Make a YouTube video and then just send them a link and, you know, let them share it around.
Yeah. Give it to me after the show.
Yeah, it's... Go ahead.
This is quite important. I bought a computer with Windows 8.1 on it. The first thing I did was run a virtual environment with Windows 7 on it. The second thing I did was put a software emulation device on Windows 7, and now I'm running Mint Linux.
Cool.
OpenVMX.
That's what the radio show's on.
Solaris 10. I've got about 4 different operating systems running off of a virtual environment off of Windows 8.
Cool.
It's not really that difficult to do. There's plenty of instructions on the internet. you don't necessarily have to use the operating system that's put on your computer. If you can use a piece of software similar to VirtualBox or VMware, I mean, VMware is a free product, but there's lots of free emulators out there where you can run an operating system on a reasonable computer, so you don't necessarily have to use the operating system that's hard-coded to your motherboard.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I like about this whole deal, and by the way, Clear Angel has a laptop Windows 95. That will still work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Well, what I like about it is it also gives you the option to do a side-by-side. So let's say your operating system for your Windows is corrupted and you still have your files on there and you don't want to lose your files. You could just go in there and put one side-by-side and save your files, right?
Yeah,
I didn't say if it's corrupted. Actually, what you want to do is you want to get your hands on the Windows Ultimate Boot Disk, which is actually built using Linux, and make a CD. You slap that in, start the system up with your optical drive as your primary boot, and it'll boot right up, and then it'll give you access to your drive, so you can save any important data in there.
Yeah.
If you've got a bunch of passwords saved in Firefox or something like that, and do a little search online, you'll find out there's just two little files that you have to go in there and get and move it to your new operating system. And when you start Firefox up, boom, all your passwords will be in there.
Cool.
If you're going to save your passwords on there, I would suggest setting a master password that, you know, only you remember, and then you have to use that to basically get into the keys that are basically in there whenever you move it over, because otherwise somebody gets a hold of that. They'll have all your passwords. They get a hold of your bookmark, save your bookmarks out of there. It's an HTML file. Now they have all your bookmarks, too. They essentially have your home system at that point at their disposal. So.
All right, well, somebody just joined us, and it sounds like they're standing in the shower. Who is that? That's right, man.
It's me. I just killed my mic. I really have got my fan up the foot of the wood box on the mic. I'm sure I'm going to say something.
Welcome, Rick.
Good morning, Good morning, Bob. I'm going to go see you guys. I've been trying for the past 25 minutes to get on this kind of big thing. I've been just about run out. Good morning.
You just missed how to get the Linux on your computer.
Well, that's all right. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out because, you know, that's really good, valuable information as far as, don't throw your old computers away, because I'm thoroughly impressed. I mean, like I said, this computer was a turkey. It only had a 10 gig hard drive, and I tried to do a reinstall of Windows, and by the time all the updates were done, I only had like 1 gig of memory left or space left on the hard drive, and so that computer to me was just flat out worthless. But since we loaded this version of Ubuntu Linux on there, I mean, I'm impressed. I mean, it works fine. It moves along fast. And, I've known about this for quite some time, because I used to hear the guys talking about all the time loading it on their systems. I wished I'd have paid attention about a year or so back. But, to me, I was a Windows kind of guy, and that's all I wanted. But now, I want them both. It's pretty cool, man. But I think that's some valuable information that folks out there listening, if you have an opportunity or whatever, to look into it. And if you can get a hold of Muddy, he can point you in the right direction. And there's a lot of folks out there that already know about it that can point you. I think Sky Blue put a link in there for SourceForge.net with the UNet booting program on there. So, see, that's what this whole Knights of the Round Table thing is all about. I mean, there's some really good pertinent information out there. If, all heck broke loose and the internet went down, then at least you'd have a working PC whenever everything went down, because everybody knows how Windows does everything. You're not going to get any updates if their internet's down, but if you still want to be able to use your PC and make you a local network with maybe your neighbors or whatever, it's still possible. And from what I've seen so far of this particular software that I'm talking about, the folks that wrote this software, I mean, they did an excellent job, a fabulous job. I couldn't say anything better about it because I've never had an installation go as smoothly as it did when Muddy loaded this on there. And I always had to go chase down drivers for motherboards and stuff like that. This thing just went right through, loaded everything up, and said, "Hey, brother, what do you want to do next?" And I was like, "Hey, I just made a new friend." You know what I mean? It's pretty cool stuff.
Well, Steve used to work for Dell, I think, on laptops and stuff and all that OS. He pretty much helped me out in the past.
Oh, Steve's brilliant with that stuff, man. I'm talking about, you guys together are combining a massive information together. I still call us all the dream team, man. I mean, it's just, to me, the combined knowledge that we bring together to the table, you know, and if we keep this ball rolling, anybody out there who needs some doggone information, when I went to that church group yesterday, I told everybody, I said, you know, if you want to learn about wind or solar or hydrogen power or any of the alternative energy guys out there, I said, there's some wonderful individuals out here on Shaziz Radio and the Mad Science Group and stuff that can point you in the right direction to whatever it is, information you're looking for. And the best part about it is it's free, you know. You can't get a better price than free as far as I'm concerned, unless somebody's going to give you the deal and give you some money as well. But, hey, that's not going to... That's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, that's not going to happen unless you're a politician.
Yeah.
Or you have friends of politicians.
But you see what I'm saying? This conversation today, we've talked about a few things, and it's been a real valuable conversation. I mean, the software deal, you can take an old turkey computer and turn it into a usable computer, and you don't have all the aggravations like you do where Windows has so much spyware and malware and it slows you down and it's memory hog and all that. This only runs what is necessary to run to get you where you're going. And as far as downloading anything, it'll flat out ask you. You got to put your password in if you set it up right from the get-go. It'll ask if you want to install this. And if it doesn't look right, you say no and don't install it. Heck, I don't even have a virus program on this thing right now, and I haven't even had 1 ounce of problem with the thing, whereas over here on my Windows, every 5 seconds, my virus program's asking me to update and install and do all the other jazz. It's got one of them little
aggravations. That brings new meaning to virus program, huh?
Yeah, it drives me nuts. And besides that, when it does all the updates, it takes up a whole lot of space because it continuously keeps loading files on there.
Yeah, and you got no hard drive left. I had a laptop. I had to take all my personal files off just to run it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say it. I've said it before, say it again, man. Three programs or three things that you should have loaded on your system when it's freshly installed. As soon as you have your operating system on it, PureBlock. That way it cannot access things that are known threat sites. Spyware and malware are just as damaging to your system as viruses are.
Yeah.
They slow it down, they load it up with all kinds of nonsense. They eat up bandwidth that viruses most of the time won't eat up while they're basically running around infecting your entire system. That's, you know, they're basically corrupting and knocking your system down, but that's not interfering with your internet connection. If you get one machine that's got a bunch of spyware on it and you have 8 computers that are all trying to use the internet, you may find that nobody can get online suddenly or everything is moving at a snail's pace, and it's because that one machine has 20 or 30 packages on it that are calling home to mom every single time you do something to tell them what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing
PureBlock puts a stop to that. PureBlock also puts a stop to your computer when you go to download something or upload something or, you know, look at something online, from reporting to the NSA, to Time Warner Brothers, to Microsoft, to basically to anybody who's looking for information and is trying to get your computer to send a ping back and let it know whenever you pop by to look at something. It stops it from doing that. Even Facebook. It will not let Facebook have any information you're not willing to let them have. Okay? That's number one. Number two, CLAMWIN. Immediately download CLAMWIN. It's
the best antivirus scanning software I've found so far. The only problem is, real viruses, unless you wrote the virus and know exactly how it works, you cannot write an antivirus program that will repair a piece of software that has been infected. The guy who writes Plan 1 does not write viruses and send them out with his software package like the other antivirus packages do. Why would they do that? Because their antivirus package is managing it while it's still a paid subscription. The day you stop paying, all of a sudden you have all kinds of problems. Where did all these viruses come from? They were basically sent out by the people who they gave you the antivirus software. Okay? And the last thing, AdBlock Plus. I don't care what browser you're using, get that thing on there and block all that nonsense. Because that's all making calls back to places that PeerBlock can't see, or some of the places that it can't see. Don't let your computer call out and talk to anybody, you know? If it is your computer, control it.
Can you send a list of those software names into the chat room that we can post out there for people?
AdBlock Plus is on Firefox.
No, it isn't. AdBlock Plus can be gotten for everything.
They
make one for Google, they make Google Chrome, they make one for Internet Explorer, they make one for Safari, they make one, there's another one, I think Oprah. They make an AdBlock Plus for almost everything. And all it is a package that sits in your browser, and you add a list to it, and it updates the list periodically of places not to let, you know, it's basically just, you know, not letting it talk to individual locations because they're known threats. They're full of nonsense. Or they're just bandwidth hogs. You know, they want to basically throw a pop-up that's got a nice 10, 15 meg flash file to tell you how badly you need that mail enlargement pill or the latest, you know, package from Dish Network or whatever. It's like, if you want something, you want something. You don't need advertisers to try to sell you something. A lot of this stuff, a lot of this advertising that you're blocking is essentially, the way I see it, is if you had a television, if we go back to television, if you had a television ad that when they sent it out, it broke your TV before you even had a chance to really use the TV, how likely are you to even use the product, even if you saw the product, if they broke your television?
Yeah, so really.
There's another good add-on called Ghostery.
Yes.
Sorry guys, I had to drop off there. It's my mate's birthday and I had to give him a call while he was around. But Ghostery basically tells you all the companies that are tracking you. Now, I've used that extensively over the last 3 or 4 years, but you would be surprised how many universities are looking at what websites you visit.
They're tracking you, they ain't tracking me. I clicked the tab for universities too when I loved PeerBlock.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow your computer to talk to any of your universities either.
AdBlock Plus.
You have to open it up. Yeah, you have to open it up and say, it's okay, let them access my computer.
And you know what makes me laugh, Thomas?
So
people say to me, oh, but I have to keep clicking buttons.
Well, how many buttons are you going to be clicking when your computer breaks down and it sits there constantly giving you that blank screen where everything kind of hazes out because it's locked up.
The blue screen of death.
Yeah, even worse.
Yeah, that's another cool thing about Linux, though. If you need a program, you don't have to go searching for it on the web. You can just go down there and hit your start button, go to Synaptic Package Manager, type the kind, say it's the DVD authoring program you want. Just type it in the search box and you'll see hundreds of them. And just click on it, say install, and hit apply, and it installs it for you. It didn't cost you anything, and you didn't have to spend hours looking for it. And it's not gonna. And all the programs, there's thousands of them. And all the programs you can get there, anything that you can dream of, just about is in there. And it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, I would still. Hey, Muddy, I would still do a real quick search on each of those and get some reviews on anything you're downloading, because when people are making stuff for free and putting it out there, there's sometimes an ulterior motive besides making something that basically they can share among their friends.
And it doesn't take very long. The nice thing about the Linux community is it doesn't take very long for everyone to let everyone else know. People let everyone else know whenever there's a bad package floating around. And to go in and yank it apart, modify it. If it's a good package, it's just got some spyware or something in it, they'll pull the spyware out and then re-release it without the spyware.
Cool.
Right. So you get the newest updated version, and it's pretty cool.
Thomas, are you familiar with the article that Bill Gates wrote whilst he was still in university? It was open source versus corporate control.
No, I'm not.
He had a real big issue about the idea that people would write software that they would give the code to the community for. If they wanted to use their implementation, then you'd have to pay for it. But if they wanted to take that code and modify it to their own uses, then it was up to them to do that. But Bill Gates had a huge issue with this, where he said, well, look, all source code should be locked away where people can't see it in the first place. And that's where Windows came from. In my own particular field, I spent about 10 years as a systems analyst on various different operating systems, but mostly OpenBMS. And we had a ticketing system in the company I worked in. If anything broke down, they used to call the help desk and somebody would open a ticket. In BMS, we had 3 a week. In things like Linux, Unix, OSS, AS400, OX390, IBM, Kix. I mean, a multitude of operating systems. You'd have maybe 20 or 30 issues a week. If you went to Windows, you'd have 10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they have to go to you to ask the questions, whereas with open source software, you can always find somebody to help you.
Windows makes deliberately forked software so they can sell and train people.
He wanted a pencil he could sell for $1,000.
Yeah. I mean, Windows is a joke. Anybody that works in the field sees Windows as the biggest joke that's ever been perpetrated on humanity since they started pushing ones and zeros around a silicon circuit board. Mm-hmm. And I listen to people constantly, and it really annoys me. But they say, oh, but Unix or Linux or Ubuntu or Mint is really difficult.
Not really.
Come on, like, Muddy's a redneck. No offense, Muddy, but if you can do it, anybody can do it.
In all actuality...
Oh, is that a caveman joke?
Hey, in all actuality, I used to use Linux years ago, and it was a little bit more difficult back in the day, but this modern updated Linux is easier than Windows to operate. I haven't had any problems, whereas back in the day, I couldn't figure out a lot of things because it was a totally different, it was totally foreign to me as an operating system as opposed to what I've become accustomed to with Windows.
Still,
you look up a page or YouTube video on how to install them, and it's really cool. You go to a page and you just highlight what you're supposed to put in the terminal. You highlight it and then go over to the terminal and paste it by pressing the scroll wheel down, the center one down, or you can copy and paste it in there and hit enter, and you go to the next step, you hit this, about 3 or 4 things, you watch it all install on your computer. When it's done, it's done. It's not that hard. Copy and paste. It ain't like you gotta do a bunch of typing.
Steve, oh, no, yes, mate.
Hey, a minute ago you apologized for calling Buddy a redneck. I want to bring a point of etiquette to you, please.
I'm proud of it.
A true redneck, to call him a redneck is a compliment. You do not deserve a punch.
Yeah.
Well, in fairness, guys, you're having a guy that's telling you about alternative operating systems that hasn't even worked out what the caps button is yet.
Hey,
people that know about you knows what I mean.
if you mow your lawn and you find a car, then you know you're a redneck, and so on and so forth. So what? Do you got any cars?
At least Muddy's never asked anyone that I know of what the any key.
I
think
anyone that calls it aluminum is definitely not a redneck.
Aluminium, yeah.
Aluminium.
I've listened to Robert enough. I've got the pronunciation down now.
Oh, God, they messed with me. We thank you so bad.
I told you guys how many times I had to call climb the water tower in my hometown with a bucket of paint in order to defend my sister's honor.
Oh man! I was say,
hold on! Wait a second.
Wait, something strange to me.
Hold on a second, Raymond. You just say that again.
I told you guys how many times I had to cut on the water in my hometown when I was a teenager with a bucket of paint in order to defend my sister's honor.
I just saw the whole picture in my head, man.
From my perspective.
Oh, I love it. That is just hilarious. I'm gonna do that, man. We got a water tower down the street. I'm gonna climb up there and do that.
No, it's not the record sister name.
Yeah, well, I understand. But I want to get a trend started with all the rednecks, you know. I get out there and paint and sump them up there, and they'll have to go up there to defend their honor and unpaint it.
Hey, could you imagine somebody writing up there for a good time and then put the police number in there?
Yeah. Hey, for a good time, call the local police department.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I like them tasers they use. They feel good.
Oh man, that is just too funny.
Oh, that's coming from a man that licks those electric fly swatters.
I'll tell you, Raymond, you're my new hero, man. That one there was good.
In my professional support capacity as a technical support guy, I had to explain to a guy with two PhDs that if he didn't plug his printer in, it wouldn't work. Come on. I have a guy here that doesn't even know where the caps button is, that can run an alternative operating system off a memory stick, bypassing the whole bloody computer in total. I mean,
yeah,
to me, that's
what it was stuck on caps.
Yeah, I mean, this gives me faith in humanity that a guy that doesn't even know where the caps button is could load an operating system off a memory stick.
Yeah, so
that's when I found the caps button, I put some super glue on it and forgot to press it first.
That's all. That's all. The time I had to go over to a friend of mine's house and fix his coffee cup holder that slides out of his computer.
Well, either way, it's still proof to what I'm saying. As far as this software out there, people listening in on the radio show should take a second look at it, because it's a lot easier than you think it is. I'm impressed with it. And so with that said, anybody interested in taking a coffee break and throw a few tunes on and come back with a fresh...
I would say before we do that, anybody out there who's listening to us and is having trouble figuring this out, maybe needs a little extra help, needs somebody to sit down with them, go look up your local hackerspace. Somebody there will help you.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people here on Shaziz Radio that if you get in contact with would be willing to send you some information and links and stuff like that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. If sending isn't good enough, if they actually need somebody to sit down and show them, if they look, go to hackerspaces.org, it'll list all the hackerspaces that are nearest to them. They just need to put in their city or their town or wherever it is they're at to find people like that. And those people are all about basically hacking electronic equipment, like, you know, turning that fly swatter you're talking about into that electronic fly swatter into, you know, a Tesla coil pump or something, you know, to basically, you know, put high voltage into your Tesla coil to get the primary started, stuff like that. They like to use things in ways that they weren't ever originally intended to see if they can get something better out of it, you know?
Also, there's another thing to point out is that TeamViewer also works really well with it. And once you get past it, they get you past a certain point, you can let them have access to your computer to help you set that up remotely. And, man, I'm sitting there for hours watching Muddy just clicking buttons and having a good old time.
Hey, watch this.
If you're always to make one statement about the internet,
much about. I've sat here with 3 gigabytes of RAM, 4 terabytes of hard drive storage, and have no idea what to do with it.
Man.
Send it to me.
Yeah, send it
to me.
Send it over here. You got a lot of volunteers.
Well, these cars set up pretty well.
Guys, we have the sum of humanity's knowledge at our fingertips. If we don't ask the questions, we won't get the answer. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
If you ask a question anywhere on the internet, somebody somewhere is going to give you an answer.
Yep.
Hey, if you just type in UN, the instructions are right there on that page, too. Makes it easy.
3 years ago, three years ago, I had Norton antivirus on my computer. Scotty came over and helped me get it off there, and he put another antivirus program on. It was really great. For 3 years, I had no problem whatsoever with my computer. 2 months ago, Norton hacked into my computer, charged my credit card $98, and uninstalled all of my virus protection programs and reinstalled Norton, and now all of a sudden, I'm getting popped up out the yin-yang.
Oh, I
think it's a virus program.
How are you getting popped up out the yin-yang?
There are a couple softwares out there that I can't stand. Norton is one of the top of the list for me that I don't like as far as virus, but McCaffrey's, that one drives me insane because that doggone thing is a memory hog, and it does like Norton does. It does what it wants to do. It don't do what the user wants. It just basically takes over, you know. And so if you got a virus software that aggravates you, it's the wrong one.
You're basically just saying that McAfee is the antivirus version of what AOL is to the internet browser system.
Yeah.
And the network, you know. It's basically for people that don't know how to use anything, so it does all the work for them.
Does AOL mean occasionally online?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
No. It's actually America Offline.
Hey, truthfully, guys, I didn't even know AOL was still around. They still going?
Are you serious?
I don't think they'll be going around. I don't think they'll be on for much longer. In about 5 years, I have a feeling most of America is going to have Google Fiber. So.
Yeah, I remember.
I start to think what they're going to do with the power they get from that, man.
I remember
$70 a month for gigabit Ethernet, or gigabit Internet, you know?
Good. You got that McAfee on the computer. That's what I was talking with that lady about. Yeah, my wife said Microsoft got mad at her because she took McAfee off her computer. She got this thing for Christmas. I gave it to her for Christmas with Windows 8, and doggone, this thing's going nuts. Pop-ups everywhere and slowing down and booting her off of Facebook, and all she does is Facebook and games and watches movies. That's it. I mean, she ain't on no porn sites and all that kind of goofy stuff, but no, the computer's got to go get goofy on her. This is new. Good thing she got McLaffy off of there. We're fixing to throw Ubuntu 14.04 on there.
And there's one that's even worse than that, a Vast software, you know. Much trouble with it. Vast, I despise that program. That was the stupidest thing I ever did, loading that one on, because I like to never got it off my computer.
Imagine this. You got worms. You know what a bookworm is. It goes from page to page all the way through the deal. That's what a worm does. And every time you open a program, it tries to take care of it. Then you got a Trojan that helps copy it and itself all over your hard drive. Then you got the spyware letting other stuff install in there. Before long, you don't have anything except virus on your computer, which is operated by a virus doggone operating system. And then you got a doggone virus control program, which controls which viruses it lets in. That's the way I look at it. I don't like it. That's why I got the fire away from it. I love Windows XP for the Movie Maker. If I can keep it offline, that Movie Maker will work forever. But other than that, I got no use for Windows anymore. I've had enough of it.
Well, you sold me, brother. So what do y'all say?
How many artists do we have in here? You don't like what's going on? You're an artist? Draw a line.
Yeah. That's it.
Well, the question I ask people about Windows. Windows is the most popular operating system with the most computers. And one of the questions I have to ask them about Windows, are you looking out of that window or is somebody looking in?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, there's more doors in. There's more doors in. Back doors.
In 2000, I qualified with the window NT4 track, MCSE, Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer. Then I went directly to a mid-range operating system and never actually worked with Windows. Now, the only time I came across Windows was Windows NT4 being used as a front end for mid-range server systems, which are running your hospital bills, your telephone bills, the national lottery. The military use OpenVMS. It's used by a lot of people, but whenever they stick Windows NT4 in the front end, it crashes your server.
Man.
I have no joy or belief in Windows operating systems because it's deliberately and intentionally built to break so they can charge poor people incredibly large amounts of money to qualify in fixing their pile of dog poo.
Okay, can somebody...
I can't be any more blunt than that.
Can somebody repeat
Windows
for...
crap.
Can somebody repeat for Clear Angel the best antivirus that they think?
ClamWin. ClamWin, like clam chowder. Win, like, you know, Windows. ClamWin.
You can get clam. Usually, when you get any version of this OS from Linux, it's usually got something on it that works with it well. But clam is very, very good. And
I was going to say ClamWin is cross-platform, so it doesn't matter what operating system you use, it'll work on it.
Right, I mean, I can get it right in Synaptic Package Manager. You don't have to
start
work.
Do not download all those chat programs for using Yahoo or Hotmail or, you know, I mean, whatever it is that's still out there and whatnot. Go pick a pigeon. P-I-G-D-I-N. It's the URL's P-I-G-D-I-N. .im.
Got P-G-I-N. Pigeon.
Pigeon. Yeah.
Also, that's the definition of American English.
Also,
I had to change the name because they were called GAIM, G-A-I-M, and AOL threw a huge fit, so they had to change their name.
Also, Sky Blue also said AVG is the one that they're using for theirs, and that's another one. That's the one of the ones like Advanced Antivirus. Is that AVG? Yeah.
It acts like a virus.
It's three pieces of software. That's good.
Yeah, anytime it's on the Windows operating system, if it's free, I'm scared of it.
That's why you have to look for regular stuff that's cross-platform. If it's free, it's because it's open source, not because somebody's trying to scam you.
Yeah.
So, and, you know,
you mean free, but it means the code is visible to everybody.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You do your research. Look and see. Because, I mean, if it does have bugs in it and somebody's, you know, continuously sticking it back in there because they're actually developing it, they'll fork it and they'll develop another version and you'll find that information pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because there'll be 1,000 people screaming, don't use that, don't use that. Use this over here, you know.
Cool.
So,
let me point out people's biggest mistake that I've seen from taking virus crap off of people's deal there. You go get a free video load video player or free this or free that. Usually in the beginning, the reasons why it's free is because the corporate world wants to make money. They need to know your habits so they can know what kind of ads to throw at you. This is all adware. And at the beginning, so you type this in, and basically you have the option to skip, 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 and then install your program. A lot of people just say, okay, there's custom install, and there's recommended install. Do not hit the recommended install. It installs all that other garbage on there.
And read
Windows has got programs already that called updates that go in there and keep the other programs running, which keep other programs running. So you've got 80 or 90 doggone things running in your task manager. Where on Windows, on Linux, what you have is basically your program running and anything that it takes to support it. And that's it. You don't have they put out Windows OS before they even tested. Nine, they put it out, and that's what all those updates are for, just to keep their mistakes running. Enough said on that.
Well, you sure say a lot after you say enough said. No, but seriously, if you're using Windows, learn what you need to have running on there, and start using Task Manager. Control Alt Delete, start Task Manager, and then go in, like every time you start your system up, go in there and end tasks, the end task tree, and just get rid of it. Don't keep anything you don't need.
There are a couple of little programs that will actually actively show you what's running on your computer that Task Manager doesn't make easily clear. And I don't really want to tell people exactly what programs to use, because I think you should find this about yourself. Because you have a personal responsibility for your own privacy.
Yep. Oh yeah, I've crashed my system medium programs off to find out if they're important or not.
The first computer I bought that was an Intel-based computer was 1997. And I had the guy up from the shop three times in the first month after I bought it. Because I pressed every button I could possibly find to break it. Because I wanted to know how it works. If you really are going to want to be secure in your data and information, do not use Windows. I've always used the phrase that it's got more backdoors than a Turkish brothel. Because the police come in the front door and they have a million backdoors for you to get out.
Alright, well, with all that said, guys, let's take a music break and refresh the old coffee.
Yes.
Alright, yes. So everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights Roundtable. Hope this information's beneficial to you. Peace and love. I got a few tunes on here, starting off with A Cup of Brown Joy, because I think that's amusing.
I would... Oh, gorgeous. Oh, that is gorgeous. Yeah. I need a cup with the brown stuff, the shade of an acorn, made warm by the same source that I take my cakes from. Using a teapot, a mug or fine china, been hooked up to IVs, need constant supplies, and a drip for my urges might verge on perverted, but for earthy brown tea, I'm certain it's worth it. With Sherpas who work hers and use a fresh fountain, I've discerned brews from Peruvian mountains. I've slurped up a cup from an elephant trunk, with a couple of monks who are utterly stunk. I've had bourbons with sultans and creams with queens, and I've bathed in Earl Grey. I'm really that keen, and missionaries dismiss me for my single epiphany. The difference between him and me is a simple sip of British tea. So when times are hard and life is rough, you can stick the kettle on and find me a cup. Now when I say Earl Grey, you say yes please, Earl Grey.
Yes please,
Earl Grey.
Yes please.
When I say Assam, you say lovely Assam.
Lovely
Assam.
Lovely.
When I say ooh, you say ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Oh, we're gone.
Gone on wrong, yeah.
I've been around the world in 80 brews to see the place it takes me to make a brew that tastes like the cream cakes made by angels do. I'm not the same as you, get shaky but aim to swing amazing fluids but don't make it the same. Now using fine leaves picked by pretty maidens in a bag knitted by a seamstress who lives in Copenhagen, brewed up in a pot made of semi-precious metal, let the blessed content settle in my very special kettle. Now when I say ooh, you say long, ooh,
long,
ooh,
long.
When I say herbal, you say no thanks, herbal,
no thanks,
herbal,
no thanks.
No. No, I want milk in it. Strong though. Wanna see that spoon stand up.
If you're tired of tea, then you're tired of blood.
I'm madder than a hatter and it fires my mic. Liken me to Earl Grey, a Sam or Ginger, Lapsang, Souchon, raise my pinky finger. Keep your snorting coffee in a proper cup of coffee pot and spot me lobbing teapot to your Ponzi rotten coffee shop. Coffee clocks nodding off, lost the plot, snorting off. Need some caffeine tannin and a Battenberg to top it off. Cut them off a different cloth, a different lot can take their beer on 80 cups a day. I haven't slept for 80 years. You could say I'm mad for tea or just say I'm mad. Oh, you can't stay any longer. Oh, actually, I'm quite glad. All the more Battenberg for me. I can barely pour, my hands have got a bit shaky from caffeine. Oh, I love it though. I'd sell my own grandma for a cup. Well, I'd sell your grandma.
Celebration of a natural kind. table and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We've got, who all we got in here? We got Honorable Knight Muddy, Muddy Mudman. We got Honorable Knight Raymond Head. And we got Steve Hope. And I think Dublin's in there somewhere in the background. And we also have Honorable Knight Thomas Anderson. So we got all the knights in here. Well, not all of them, but some really brilliant minds. We have a conversation off the line, kind of something on the line of frequencies and the powers of things you can do, like tearing down walls and Tesla's earthquake machine. Who wants to jump in on that one? Anybody? Don't everybody jump to the mic at once.
I think Steve and Buddy are the best.
Yeah, I'll go for that.
Start.
Go ahead, Devin. We ain't heard from you for a minute.
Yeah, no, I'll go for that.
We're waiting.
The Tesla earthquake machine is pretty simple. If you put the right frequency in, you create an earthquake. It's sort of like if you've got a swing and you're pushing the swing to the kid up faster and faster and faster. Eventually the swing will make a loop-de-loop. Well, it's the same with an earthquake. If you fire in the frequency at the right frequency, you start to cause that section of the ground to rock backwards and forwards, and eventually it will split and create the earthquake.
Well,
you need a lot of power.
In tuning,
it's
folks,
it's easier to rock the boat if you know how fast to rock it.
Yeah, well, in tuning folks, they call it sympathetic resonance. Resonance is that if you got two identical tuning forks and you bang on one of them, then that sound wave or vibration wave that goes across there will match the resonance of the other tuning fork, and they both will vibrate. And so if you can use whether it be electrical or, you know, whatever, to actually create the resonance of any given object, you can cause it to vibrate. And so pretty much that's the simple way of saying, you know, how Tesla actually did his earthquake deal. Anybody disagree with that? What'd you say there? Raymond?
Oh, I said I've done that tuning fork trick, and it is neat. I really did. I mean, it is impressive to someone. I was in high school at the time. Someone has never seen it. It is really a neat trick. So a lot of people out there, if you get a chance, try it. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah, and I'm going to actually do a little experiment using guitar pickup tubes or guitar pickup pulls. And some ferrous metal made tuning forks, so that whenever the vibration's going on the tuning fork, you can actually cause a little bit of electricity on the opposite side. So essentially, using a tuning fork, creating wireless energy, you know, on a small scale. And I want to do some experiments to see how that works out. Buddy, I think I've already showed you a diagram of what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. If you take two tuning forks, you ring the first one. The second one is ringing almost as loud. So when you quiet the first one, just by the sound waves, it transfers pretty good. It's basically the same principles that the Indians used taking bamboo and sitting it in the water. You get two identical pieces of bamboo, the same internodial length, same diameter, and same weight. You stick the first two nodes down into the water and leave the one-third out, and some guy upstream or downstream has his in the water, and you can tap out code. It was the first predecessor to Morse code. It was the first wireless, other than mental telepathy, the first wireless communication. But what Shaziz is looking at is taking this ferrous metal tuning fork, can put the magnetic pickup up next to it, taking the signal off of that and running it over to the other one with the other. To the other tuning fork with a magnetic pickup, and you want to use the magnetics that are driven by the vibration through the magnetic coil to drive the other one.
Yeah.
You should pretty much stay in phase with that, as long as you don't have it. If it doesn't, then go ahead and switch your wires around, it ought to be right. He's hoping to get free energy out of that, and I think to mix it with the Tesla coil. Is that right?
Yeah, and also you can actually use that to send messages across from one tuning fork to the next by, you know, kind of like the old telegraph or the Morse code system. To where you interrupt that frequency off of one tuning fork just briefly enough to send a carrier wave or a ripple in that deal, and on the opposite side, I literally believe that if you do this right, using a power coil on one side to vibrate the tuning fork, you could hook a piezoelectric speaker up that will intermittently disrupt the normal resonance of that tuning fork, that would stop it on the opposite side and then pick it up as audible sound on the other side. You see where I'm coming from?
Exactly. That's where you're coming from. Heck yes.
I think it would be pretty cool, you know. If nothing else, it would be an awesome addition to the experiments that you were talking about as far as the tuning forks. If you could actually send sound from one tuning fork to the next and have it come out the other side as audible you know, sound, the way you could understand what's being said, I think it's pretty cool. And it'll also prove some beliefs that I have as far as, you know, how you can transmit energy in all different forms and actually send real-time data across while you're doing it.
You know, a simple mind like mine, the first thing that pops in my mind is Morse code.
Yeah.
But again, to come in different tunes. So if you had a whole series, like somebody knows how, you know, eventually learned on steel guitar to play certain notes and they can wow, wow, and actually make it sound like words, I believe you're right. If you had enough tuning fork with enough training, you could actually send audible words.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And you could, I'm thinking as well, is that you could hook, you know, I'm just going to call it a disruptor coil, just for general purposes. But, you know, when you vibrate that thing to begin with, it's already vibrating. And so if you're sending, like I said, an intermittent signal that is disrupting that frequency just temporarily enough, I think you could actually plug your electric guitar into one of these coils and be able to change the pitch of that tuning fork just long enough to send your music across the other side. I think you could actually play a guitar wirelessly using tuning forks.
It'll probably be very high on the pitch stuff.
Well, it may be, but you know, even at that, it's still, you know, you remember back in the day when you used to take two like pork and bean cans and stretch a wire in between there, and you know, you get that vibration going down, and you could actually hear your other guy on the other side, you know?
Yeah.
The same with these wires.
What'd you say?
Said you would take the two bean cans and tie them together with cotton string and then coat the string with beeswax. It works really good.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think it would be neat as far as wireless energy transmission, because anything vibrational frequency is energy, and that's how we're able to, you know, send signals from one cell phone to the next and so on and so forth. But how many people has ever done it with sound waves, where you're actually sending an audible sound that, you know, probably somebody ain't going to hear a mile away, but if you do it in that method and they have the same type of receiver on the opposite side, they can actually hear what you're saying. Kind of like money.
I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but to me it seems like it. I once, years ago, just for the heck of it, took a speaker and aimed it up at the sky. I thought, I'm live right under the approach path to DFW Airport, and I took the speaker and aimed it at one of the jets coming by and put a multimeter on it, and by dang on it, that was actually producing electricity.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it was there.
So I'll tell you how to amplify that. You know the pitch of the jet. Get your piece of PVC tube and keep tapping it and cutting it until it gets to that pitch. Next time he goes by, put your microphone in the end of that and aim it up at it. It'll definitely get about five times stronger.
Cool.
I've got to try that.
Yeah, two other quick points on that. On that tin can phone, man, the best, I think the cool thing is when you got to stretch, kind of tight, you thump the wire. and it sounds like a ray gun.
Yeah.
I used to love that.
Cool. We take the top of the can, we cut it out with the old time can openers, and we put that down in the bottom of the can and fast the wire to hit. And it would act like the people increase the vibrations like people on a speaker.
That's a brilliant idea. I never thought of that.
Guys, when I was back in my hydrogen production days, I found a little piece of software called the Little Sign Gen version 1.0. Thrown it into the chat room there. And what I did is got a little 3-watt speaker and put it beneath a cup of water. And I went through the various ranges of this sine wave generator through different frequencies. And you can make water dance.
Oh.
That's on the basic principle of Tesla's earthquake machine, but on a very limited scale.
Yeah, and there's something really cool about that too, because there's a lot of videos out there, and I did post a link to one of them in there where they're actually taking sound waves like you're talking about with the frequency generator, and you can actually see geometrical shapes forming in the vibrating sand or whatever it is that they put on the top of it. So, you know, there's a whole lot to that, and it's worth researching.
You know, back in the experiment, I did it with water, I did it with ferrofluids, with basically iron in oil. But just to give the listeners a good idea, this is what it sounds like when you range through the different frequencies.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And you said you put a link to that in the chat?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tiny little bit of software that runs on Windows, it runs on Linux, it runs on everything.
Steve, you're the guy that can reproduce that jet fighter pilot back in the early 50s that made a machine that uses sound so high-pitched the human couldn't hear it, but he would actually put it in an ounce cup of water, coffee cup, and cause the water to boil in just under 20 seconds.
Cool. The point I was trying to produce was to vibrate water molecules to make it easier to produce hydrogen.
Vibrating water will cause it to get hot. Last winter, I got water out of my faucet in my office, and maybe the temperature, it was 42 degrees. I put it in my blender and ran the blender for 20 minutes and rose the temperature of the water to 92 degrees. So vibrating water will create heat. There is only in water.
So with that said, you can do like Steve is talking about, and I believe that's how Stan Myers did it as far as his injectors was to send radio frequencies in to separate that hydrogen and oxygen on real time. And, you know, that with the atomizer at the end of it made it where he could run that dune buggy.
I believe that's possible.
And so, you know, that is definitely worth research. So I'm going to try to get me one of really good generators, sound generators. I can't even remember what I was going to say now. I'm going to try to get a hold of a really good frequency generator so that I can go from all the way down to, from 0 hertz all the way up as high as, I can go. And try experiments with all of them, see which one of those frequencies actually separates that water. Don't everybody jump to the mic at once. I wouldn't want nobody to chip a tooth.
Well, it took us a minute just to think about it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well,
if you can use vibrational frequencies on virtually any loose substance, it's going to cause an effect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's it.
I had something here about a year ago. Him and I were talking about vibrations now, and he was saying something about low pitch vibrations, even so low that you can't even hear them, can actually do damage, real damage to heavy objects. Scott, fill us in on that.
I'm sorry, I was sidetracked. What was the question?
Well, what he's talking about is similar to what Hutchinson was doing with all that. See, Hutchinson got a hold of a whole bunch of old military radio equipment, and he was using radio frequencies to do all kinds of crazy things. He was just scanning through every frequency that he had access to, and he literally got metal to melt, you know. And so with that said, you know, there's a whole lot to be researched in that. I mean, the, if you look at how the microwave oven actually works, and as far as how it actually heats the water, a microwave isn't nothing more than a really short, fast wave going through a dipole molecule, which causes it to heat up. That's as simple as that. So,
By vibration, friction, right? It's water will heat.
Resonant frequencies. Everything has a resonant frequency.
Right. That's
you know the resonant frequency of cancer. You can put a wave, or a magnetic wave or a sound wave, depending on what it is. But basically, like cancer, it's a magnetic frequency that it resonates at, and you can explode every organism of cancer in a body with it. If you want to get rid of a certain parasite, you can find the frequency that it runs at, send that into the body. It will explode, leaving the rest alone. There's lots of things you can do with resonant frequency.
Well, here's
all your radio is resonant frequency. Sound is resonant frequency. Light is resonant frequency. It's all electromagnetic waves, even sound.
Here's the thing that needs to be done as far as research on that is to literally catalog at each frequency all the way from 1 hertz all the way up, and if there's a way to go in reverse on that on the frequency range as well onto the lower spectrum. But if you start cataloging, you know, hey, let's say at 1 hertz my left eye twitched, you know. you could literally get to the point where you would have people would know at a specific resonance at this frequency right here, it kills this certain type of bacteria, you know, kind of like Raymond Rife was talking about what you just mentioned about killing cancer cells. You are targeting a specific one while leaving the other ones fully intact and not even interfering with them.
Exactly. On top of that, there's more you can do with frequency. Thomas Anderson can even inject on this because he's the one that brought it to my attention. I was talking about, doggone, I need to grow some new teeth. He says, well, you can build a little device. I think it was 1.5 kilohertz or megahertz at a pulsed at a frequency of 1 megahertz and 23 milliwatts, and it just basically you put that right up there where the root of your teeth is there for 20 minutes a day, and your tooth will regrow itself. Pretty cool.
Well, what if you ain't got no tooth roots anymore?
Tooths?
Oh, you're talking about, no, it doesn't matter if there's a root or not. It'll cause the tooth to just grow again.
Cool.
Right. Stimulate it at the frequency it needs to grow at. And it says, hey, you cells, you need to grow one of these.
Well, hook a brother up, Thomas.
Well, are you sure you want more teeth to have them pulled again?
Well, yeah.
Or are you going to try to figure out what went wrong last time so it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, exactly.
I can chew a lot of stink before they wear out, I guarantee.
Hook a brother up, man.
I posted the links in Knights of the Roundtable already.
Cool.
Posted like 3 weeks. One of them's on Wikipedia, and they basically gave all the details on it. It was just basically a piezo tweeter. There's another one that they use... They can basically use lasers, low powered laser pulses, to stimulate the actual cells in the tooth that's already there. That basically is, you know, maybe got a chunk of it busted.
Yeah.
To get it to regrow, it'll regrow the dentine. It won't regrow the enamel though. That's up to you to put that enamel back onto it. But they're little herbal concoctions that'll basically rebuild the enamel on the surface of the teeth, supposedly. So.
Liquid nail.
No.
Two-part epoxy resin, man, and some food coloring. You can make your teeth green.
Epoxy resin has never really been that hard. Everything that I've used that's epoxy is soft for a really long time, and then when it finally gets hard, it gets brittle. It falls apart.
I was just trying to be funny, man. Anyway,
I was going to say, my funny quip is, you know, even though it's not quite this bad, it still reminds me of Silly Putty.
Yeah.
My wife's fingernail polish is an enamel.
I like your whole don't look into...
Green teeth, man. How you like that?
I like your whole don't look into the laser with the remaining eye.
Yeah.
You get some pearly white fingernail polish and tell you, look at my pearly white. You yes. got that pearlescence to them.
Krylon, man. Krylon and masking yeah. tape.
Yeah, say it with Krylon.
I've had a lot of dental work done here, and they're still doing fluoride treatments on teeth.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. They give you toothpaste free from the dental surgery that has 1,350 parts per million of fluoride in
it. Nice.
Man. I actually gave the dentist sufficient material from Professor Emeritus from Australia, from America, from about five different countries, and I gave this to the dental surgeon and said, you are giving people a neurotoxin to save their teeth.
Man.
And it's not to save their teeth, it just makes them more brittle.
If you keep doing this to people, you are deliberately and intentionally poisoning them because you have the information
mm-hmm.
from people way above your educational level.
Well, you know, and I go back to this scene that I saw in Star Trek one time. There's that doctor on there. I can't remember what his name is. Is
it Bones?
Bones, yeah. There's one really cool scene where they kind of go back in time, and the doctor from Star Trek is going down through there, and he's like basically talking about how these doctors are medieval, you know. And he gives this lady a pill who's on a gurney, because he asked her what was wrong with her, and she said something about her kidney or her liver or whatever.
Kidney transplant.
Yeah, and so yeah. he gives her a pill, and she grows a new kidney, and, you know, goes on down the road. You can hear this lady hollering about, oh, he grew me a new kidney or whatever, you know. But it just, as we're talking about the way that the dentists are using fluoride and stuff to essentially poison you to... save your teeth, you know, it is medieval, man. You know, you use chemotherapy to try to kill a cancer cell. At the same time, you kill the immune system and, you know, you kill the good cells along with the bad. So,
yeah, I was going to say, the reason why you got cancer primarily
about chemotherapy. Research has recently been done that has found that when you give people chemotherapy treatments, proteins are exuded by healthy cells that cancerous cells feed from.
So you're essentially making it worse.
Well, again, dude, cancer is a natural, healthy, normal attempt to try to do something in your body, and you have white blood cells that go around and go... looking at the DNA of your cells and go, you're okay, you're okay, you're okay, die. You're not right. There's something different about you. And the cancer cells don't look right to those cells. So you have cancer in your system right now that you'll have no problems with because your white blood cells take care of it. The yeah. people who are going in and they're diagnosing them with cancer, it's because their immunity system is compromised. So why would you give them something that's going to further compromise their immunity system that basically regulates the system in order to make sure everybody's on the same page?
Well,
that's what the problem is the cancer cells are not on the same page. They're all on a different program. They all want to do something else.
I agree, and that's another reason why I think they say that life imitates art, and if you've ever noticed, a lot of technologies that's been on TV shows up, and they actually got, you know, in that Star Trek video where they got this machine that they go and they put it over the top of somebody and it heals their bone or whatever, you know, and they're using essentially frequencies to do that. And thinking about that in conjunction with Rife's research and stuff like that, and what you was talking about, how they were talking about regrowing teeth, and I'm a firm believer that frequencies are something that really seriously needs to be addressed as far as research purposes, you know, and cataloging at what frequency certain things occur, you know what I mean?
Well, the one thing that people don't get too is that your DNA is basically made up of groups of atoms,
groups of molecules that are all clustered together. They see it as just a whole bunch of individual little atoms, but each of those clusters of atoms starts out as a molecule, and those molecules have their own frequency as well. So yeah. There's every possibility that all these chemicals are trying to pump into people's systems right now at TA Sciences to try to basically shut down the death clock. The clock that basically shuts down your body's ability to repair itself anymore at some point, and then eventually you die of what's commonly referred to as old age. They're trying to shut that mechanism off so that people can live a longer life. With chemicals,
with that, Thomas.
This is the thing, though. It may very well be that, you know, it'll be a lot easier just to use a frequency. You only have to affect a few cells to revert them back to the state they were whenever you were born. And when the other ones start dying off because they basically don't have the ability to keep replicating, those healthy cells will take over and just kind of fill in the void. You know, that's how your cells work anyway. Whenever you're working out and you're tearing up your muscles and whatnot, you're killing cells in your muscles. The other cells around them that are still healthy replicate so that they can basically replace the cells that are damaged. And because of the workload, they go, well, we need more. Let's build it a little bigger, so this time we won't be torn up so bad.
Well, you know?
I can add to that. I put a link in there in the chat for apoptosis is why cells commit suicide and die. Now, one of the theories is cancerous cells have lost the ability to die. And what they do is they go into like a survival mode where they replicate over and over again.
Hold on. It's not a theory. They have looked at the genetic structure of these things and they have found that they modified healthy cells with the same modification that allows them to replicate, and then they find healthy cells that replicate indefinitely without being cancerous. The thing that you are looking at is the telomerase. There is a chemical that your cells cannot make after you reach a certain point. So therefore, the component, the clock, that ticks down before you eventually run out and then the cell can't repair itself anymore, this chemical, if you can turn it on, your cell's ability to produce it back on, it will go out and it'll repair, it'll rewind that clock. It keeps rewinding it, so you never run out of time.
Cool.
And the cancer cells, this is the thing though, the cancer cells come in two flavors. Two major flavors. You've got benign and malign. The benign cancer cells don't have that trick. They can't replicate indefinitely. So they get so big, and then they just kind of, they lay there as a lump and can't basically spread throughout your entire systems. The malign ones are the ones that have exactly what you're talking about, where they don't have the mechanism that tells them you're out of time. Because the section of DNA that we have that says don't make that telomerase anymore is gone. It's missing. So they're actually producing telomerase.
Uranium is the gift that keeps on giving for 30,000 years.
Yeah, guys, I can add to that story there. If you want, guys, I can add a bit to the story there.
Go ahead.
I met a girl who worked in a big German pharmaceutical company, and in 1980 they identified a hormone that will definitely guarantee to give a 30% increase in lifespan. Shortly after they identified it, her boss and herself got fired. But it seems that if you're very, very rich, because I met an American who worked for a top Russian oligarch, if you're very rich and you got $10 million and six doctors to look after you, you will be given this special hormone and you will get an increase of 30% in your lifespan. So
are you talking about the human growth hormone?
She didn't identify for me which hormone it was,
but
only that she said
say if you,
a hormone that
right,
would definitely
you look,
give you 30%.
If you look up Lou Ferrigno and look up his health issues, you'll find that basically there was a point where the skin was all sagging, his hair was falling out, and I mean he was looking really, really rough. And he went out of the States for human growth hormone injections, and when he came back his hair was, you know, shock black again, it was thick again, all the wrinkles and the sagging flesh went away, he was, you know, pumped back up muscularly and whatnot. It was like they knocked 30 to 40 years and just like that.
Well, that's,
but I put a link to the research facility that's actually researching the telomerase production compound called cycloestrogenol, and it's found in astragalus.
Well, that's
one of the most important plants when it comes to Chinese herbal medicine.
That's all fascinating stuff, man.
The technology definitely exists. It's existed since 1980. Yeah.
That's all fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
We need to take...
It's not pie in the sky what you're talking about.
No, but what I'm saying, that's all fascinating stuff, but we need to put a page up here on the channel with all this information. Everything that we've been talking about today is really good, valuable information for people to look into, man.
What'd you call that, psychoestrogenol?
Cycloestrogenol.
Psycho what?
Cycloestrogenol.
Cycloestrogenol.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a place that sells the TA65 compound. It's up, and they sell it and expect you to basically go out and, you know, do your research and find your doctors and whatnot to do the testing and whatnot so you don't get cancer. Because if you have benign cancer cells that will not be able to replicate indefinitely and cause you a serious problem, they'll eventually just die off, and then, you know, your body will reabsorb the nutrients, not the bad DNA, but just the nutrients from them. If you take this stuff, there's every possibility that this will actually give them some more extra life and make
that,
it...
That is the link that you just dropped?
Yep, just dropped two. One is the company that basically is doing the research trying to find a better compound. There is a site that sells the original company, that the First Link's compounds. They sell their compounds on their site. They're a legitimate wholesaler for and retailer for the TA65 compound, which is cycloestrogenol. So
that's TASciences.com and REV Genetics, Rev Genetics.
Right.
TA65.
Yeah, I will say, if you look up resveratrol, which is found in red wine, you'll find Rev Genetics. They've got tons and tons of other compounds that they sell, like you know, just capsules of like just the raw resveratrol and other antioxidants and stuff like that that they sell. So,
if I start drinking red wine, I'll get my cyclo.
It's resveratrol. You find resveratrol in red wine.
Resveratrol.
Yeah, cycloestrogenol is found in very, very minute traces in Astragalus membranicus. It's what they call VTEC.
Is that why some winos never seem to die?
actually, that's part of the French, what do they call that? You know, because they eat such terrible food, yet for some reason they still seem to live so well and, you know, be so healthy. It's because they're basically, some of the stuff they're taking in is actually really, really healthy for them and offsets all the bad things they take in, like the, you know, refined flour and sugar and stuff like that.
So never mess with a wino, huh?
Yeah.
You know what I don't understand?
Old man, jump up and kick your wazoo.
With all this said right here, what I don't understand is why somebody hasn't done enough research or compiled enough research to actually put the perfect diet together. You know, like maybe you eat certain foods and a glass of wine every single day, and that would be the perfect diet. And as long as you stay with that, you'd be healthy. I've noticed that the Japanese, they're pretty healthy over there with their diet. I mean, they eat a lot of fish. They eat a lot of different things that, you know, you ever...
You mean they used to be healthy before the Fukushima incident?
Well, you know what I'm saying. I'm talking about if you went back to their original culture and the diets that they had. And even if you go back into biblical references where they were talking about that people would live 500 years or more, they must have had, instead of what we got today with all the trash that's in the, you know, you go to the grocery store, it's a chemistry set, man. You could probably make a bomb out of the Twinkie section over there with all the chemicals, you know. So, what are we eating today?
I have a friend that was, he was joking around saying, here in America, we don't build men of iron and steel anymore. We build them out of titanium. And the reason he said that is because of the white they use for the filling is titanium dioxide.
Well, so there you go, man. If you need any titanium dioxide, go get you a Twinkie, and you can build your UFO out of titanium.
you don't even need to do that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You started off with the word why, and then you asked the question, and I have the answer to it.
Well, let's hear it.
That? Not enough money in it.
Well, you know what? We got to get somebody motivated to, because Thomas, you got a vast amount of information. All of us do, but if we could get a deal put down to where a perfect diet, as far as everything we know in alternative foods and stuff like that, and people could try that for a month, it would prove or disprove itself how healthy you would be. You know, it's kind of like the hemp seed oil or hemp oil deal or any of the other alternative medicines out there. You know, if people, if it was in an affordable range, and sometimes as far as buying fruits and vegetables, it's kind of, you know, counterproductive to go to the grocery store and buy anything, because you don't know what kind of pesticides are been used on it, or whether it's been modified or whatever. So growing your own stuff would be a benefit, and Steve has a lot of information in growing foods and vegetables. What would be nice is to get all this information on one page to where somebody could go and they could either contribute to the perfect diet and get that out there to the people. You see what I'm saying? Because if I knew that a certain meal every day would extend my life and make me feel better, and I knew exactly what to eat and what not to eat, you know what I mean?
Well, I was gonna say if you get people doing this, you're gonna find cancer,
but unfortunately they have the death sentence for growing the cure of cancer in the country I currently live in.
Okay, now as I was saying, if you get people on this diet, you're gonna find that George Carlin was right. You're gonna have a whole lot of people living all this really super healthy lifestyle, and they're gonna wonder why they died from absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Who's going to pay for the pension for that, Thomas?
But again, though, live healthy, exercise, die anyway.
Well, you know,
let's focus on fixing the dying thing, because when we fix that, that's going to basically give our body the ability to overcome all this garbage they keep giving us.
Well, there's a comment in the chat room, and it makes a lot of sense, too. Crazy Dual Mind 2025 said diets have to be created for each person. People different. And that's a good point to put out there, because everybody's chemistry is already jacked up.
There's also the fact that basically, depending on what cycle of life you're in, too, your diet has to change to match that, too.
Yeah, where would a person go to a dietitian or what in order to be able to have them help them specifically figure out the perfect diet for each individual?
Baby food.
A Chinese medicine hole.
I would say just do your own research, man. Start reading up on herbalism and things like that, because the people who actually have all of the knowledge on the herbal remedies and whatnot that actually work also have a ton of information on nutrition, too. People eat way too much meat now. But you have these people that are basically going completely vegan, where, you know, they're not willing to touch anything that comes from an animal at all. And, I mean, we're omnivores. We're supposed to eat a little of everything. If you look at our teeth, we have incisors for slicing through things. We have molars for grinding things up. So, you know, we even have the canines for, you know, tearing, ripping and tearing, which is for flesh. So, I mean, we're really meant to eat pretty much everything that comes along, and we need a rounded diet. But we don't need to eat all of the heated up to make sure it doesn't look gross and disgusting. I mean, think about it. If you set most of the food that you eat hot in the fridge and go to get it out of the fridge to eat it, most of that stuff is horrifying to look at, because there's like white congealed lard and stuff all over it and whatnot. That's bad for you. That's why they're heating it up and won't eat it cold. You don't get that with fish. When you go to Japan, you eat any of the fish that they're pulling out there. They're, a lot of that they're eating raw, you know?
But it's
so. Do you know where they found resveratrol from?
yeah,
where the source of raspberry troll came from.
Well, I was going to say, it's found in the skins of, like, Concord grapes and the red grapes and whatnot.
Yeah, but do you know where they specifically found that compound, the location they found it in?
No.
It was in the Italian Alps.
Okay.
There was a bunch of students doing their old hiking and backpacking thing, and they found an Italian graveyard up in the Italian Alps, and every single tombstone was a centenarian or more. And they just thought, well, you know, they didn't keep very good records at the time, and these people couldn't be over 100 years old, not on, in general. And then they looked at the diet, and they found that the people that lived in this isolated village up in the Italian Alps were living exceptionally long lives. And when they started looking at the diets and analysing the compounds of what they were eating, they found that they actually had an exceptionally good diet.
Huh. Well, you know, that it, once again, though, crazy dual mind put in there talking about blood tests to basically test your chemistry of what's lacking and whatever. I would think that if we could actually put together a page with a whole lot of, you know, good things, information as far as what to eat and what not to eat, and then also factor in of all the different communities out there and cultures, you know, like Indian cultures, they have a lot of things that they've learned through over all the years, and like the Japanese culture and all the different cultures around the world. I think that it's possible to go around and find all these good things and put them together in one batch, and you know, to find the perfect diet. Now, as far as blood tests, you'd have to go to a doctor to have a blood test, unless there was some sort of home deal that would basically tell you all the things, if you're lacking in iron or whatever, you know. But this is all stuff that combined knowledge compiled together that could be really beneficial for, you know, all of humanity. And we got the knowledge to do it. It's just so scattered out there. You know, somebody comes down with a sickness, they go around and ask everybody, what's the best cure for this? You know, the research is out there. I'd like to see it all put in one spot to where the average Joe, who ain't a really good researcher, could actually go there and learn something. You know what I mean?
Steve, that village you were talking about, wasn't their main crop that they grew almond trees?
Yes.
Yes, that's okay. I read the same article last week. Oh, man, and everybody there, they eat almond seeds. In 1953, some researchers discovered a chemical in almond seeds that killed cancer cells.
It's called vitamin B17.
Yes, B17. They synthesized it, put it in a pill, gave to give to cancer patients, and the 94% cure, not treatment, cure rate. In 1958, all of your major prescription drug companies in the United States pulled their money, paid lobbyists to lobby in Congress to have this chemical illegalized in the United States because it was curing cancer. And hey, once you cure cancer, then they can't sell you a cancer treatment. Your life means nothing to the drug companies except money. They do not want to cure you. The cure you is death to the company.
Hey, Boomer, I was saying yesterday, Axel Smith Klein ended up with a $300 million fine from the Chinese government for bribery and corruption. GlaxoSmithKline, one of the world's biggest drug companies, and they never even challenged it. Some of their senior executives are locked up behind bars right now for 4 years for bribery and corruption in the medical industry. It's not just GSK, they've got their own homegrown pharmaceutical companies where they put people in prison as well. The Chinese are sending out the message that we have our own herbal remedies, we have our own doctors, we have medicine that goes back 5,000 years. We do not need your nonsense.
Right. You know, I read a few years back that cancer, the main food of cancer cells is acid, and making something else. There's been a laboratory north of Mexico City in Mexico that's been working and using baking
Minnesota and other vitamins to as an experiment to cure cancer. They've been doing this since the early 60s, 1960s, and so far they have a 96% cure rate. So immediately I just started taking baking soda. I take two heaping teaspoons of baking soda a day for 10 straight days every 2 months. The reason for that is it turns your body alkaline, because the cancer cells have nothing left to eat, and they starve to death. But you don't want to do this every day for the rest of your life, because I don't know if you can survive with an alkaline body. So what you do is it takes 2 to 3 days to turn your body alkaline, then another 4 or 5 days for the cancer cells to starve to death, and then another 1 or 2 days to make sure. And then you just get off the offer and let your body go back acid so that you can digest your food and live a decent life. Ever since I started doing that about 3 years ago, I've had no problem. I recently went for my SBA or SBT, whatever the test it is, and supposedly if your blood comes out 38 or higher, you're guaranteed of having death-type cancer in your body. Anything below a 4 is supposedly good. I was tested at 0.7, less than 1. He had colon cancer. He went in and had his test done. He tested 38. I mean, definitely, dying type cancer. And I talked him into taking the baking soda. He went back 2 months later. His blood tested out 7. Now, in 2 months again later, he goes in and his blood tested out 0.4. So, I mean, he's almost cancer-free just from baking soda.
There was G. Edward Griffin made a documentary in the mid-80s called The World Without Cancer, and he talked about various distinct groups in isolated parts of the planet that had no history of cancer.
Yeah.
Now, I was in Afghanistan in the Panjshir Valley, which is on the border of the Hindu Kush mountain ranges between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and a man's wealth in that region is indicated by the amount of apricot trees that he owns.
Yes, yes, yes.
When I was there, they gave me apricots, because I was there in August in the harvest season, and they made me crack open the shell and eat the seed. When I got back, I had a look at the technology behind it, so to speak. You know, let my fingers browse across the sum of humanity's knowledge through the internet. And the highest natural concentration of vitamin B17 is in apricot seeds.
Yes.
Wow. Never. It's actually considered an insult to throw away an apricot seed without eating it.
Wow.
In fact, they've done some tests, but they cannot find a single person in that village with cancer in their body.
No. There is no history of cancer in the northern part of Afghanistan.
But anybody that leaves that village and goes out and lives there, then they automatically come down with cancer. Just like anybody else. It's the apricot seeds. It's not the seed, it's that chemical you're talking about, the B17 in there. And that's what they synthesized in the United States in 1953. Synthesized it, put it in a capsule, and gave it to people, and had a 94% cure rate of cancer, and they took it off the shell and made it illegal. We call it cured cancer.
Well, don't you have...
It's called Laetrope.
That was the chemical name you wanted.
Don't you guys find it fascinating how we're sitting here talking about all these different natural cures that are out there, and yet people are still sick all over the globe? You know, you can't sell no drugs if ain't nobody sick. And so, once again, we're back to the whole why would anybody want to trust the corporate governments or businesses out there? You go to get some sort of medicine for the common cold, you know. They don't treat the actual problem, they only treat the symptom. And so all you're doing is basically prolonging it and feeling good while you do it, you know. Why can't we put all this information into one general vicinity where anybody can have access to it? Every one of us has heard of all kinds of...
It is.
Yeah.
Have you looked in the links that I sent?
No, I haven't had the opportunity. I've been busy.
Everyone should have a look. The very last one I sent was a free download of that book.
Cool.
You're asking about where to get the information, where to get the information, where to get the information, why isn't it compiled? That book is so comprehensive. I have helped people who have had nothing but failure for 5-10 years with doctors. Within a month, they're completely over their issues, and have talked to them years later, and they still, after stopping, they still had no problems with their issues. We're talking like, you know, 23-24-year-old women who are having menopausal issues already, and they couldn't figure out what in the heck is wrong. It was, you know, it's got to be, you know, something that basically just can't be cured. They have to just keep treating it because it's biological. It's some, you know, it's genetic or something. Bait them up some stuff and basically gave it to them. Problem solved.
And what's the name of the book again?
The Science of Herbal Healing, and it's written by John Heinerman.
Cool. Right.
So, young man, I studied acupressure, which is like acupuncture, but it's just using pressure points in the body. And I used to go around and help people a lot. I mean, deal with headaches and upset stomachs, fear particles, all kinds of stuff. And I run across this girl. The first time I went across a guy, he come up with a headache. I could not make his headache even ease off, let alone go away. And I told him, I said, you need to go to a doctor. You need to go right now. Well, I scared him. And he went to a doctor. Come to find out, he had a brain tumor.
Right.
He went to, it was just caught it right in the beginning. He went, had an operation. They cut the tumor out. He managed to survive today. And that was 50 years ago. Later, about 2 years after that, brought her teenage daughter to me, said that every other month she was having unbelievable menstrual cramps, and so I worked on her, and it was the first woman, a girl, female, whatever, I ever touched in my life, and I could not ease the menstrual cramps. I couldn't even phase them. But every other woman I'd ever done to, which was hundreds, I would ease their pain within a matter of 5 or 10 minutes. And I couldn't tell her, I said, take her to a doctor now. Come to find out, her left ovary, it was cancer. They had to take it out. So it saved her life. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be a hero or nothing like that, but I believe in the herbal medicine and the natural medicines. I believe big time.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
What's the use of giving the man, what's the use of giving somebody morphine because their leg is broken?
Right.
You got to fix the, you know, just because they can't feel it. You know, don't mean nothing. You know, you walk around and hurt yourself because you can't feel it.
Hold on. As a man who's had his leg broken in 6 pieces, I can testify that morphine does have its use, though.
Okay? It's not knocking at you, Thomas.
Let me finish. What I'm trying to say is just because you can kill the pain doesn't rock. The leg needs to be fixed. Acupressure doesn't cure things, it takes care of the pain. Alright.
No. If it's done right, it actually, if your problem is a circulation issue, it fixes the circulation issue.
Oh, yeah. By increasing circulation.
Right, it's fixing the problem. If the acupressure can't fix the problem with circulation, like, you know, Raymond is finding out, then you need to go in and get something taken care of, because if you've got a tumor and you increase the circulation to it, all you're doing is making the tumor have the capability to grow even faster.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. So,
I just put a link into the box there, guys, about how the CB2 compound in the cannabis plant is known to reduce or stop cancerous cells. Now, I don't want to listen to all this religious mumbo-jumbo crap about the cannabis plant being evil.
I never thought it was evil.
I've heard it from enough people at this point that I need them to open their eyes to the reality of this situation. God's plant is there for a reason. And the opinion of civil servants do not overrule that.
What our American government wants to do, because they want us to go to war with everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And how often did the natives that were here beforehand use that to settle all their disputes because they get everybody to calm down long enough so they can see everybody's viewpoint?
Yeah,
last thing they want people to do. They don't want people to get along with other people because they have different religious beliefs. They want them to go over there and kill them because they're the bad guys. And once we're done, then, oh, well, hey, look at all this free oil.
Hey, what do you think they were smoking in their peace pipe, man?
Exactly.
Hey, I was free in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fairness, I spoke to a druid in Ireland that said that in America they grow something like 26 different varieties of tobacco, and the Native Americans smoke none of them. But it's not the cannabis plant they're smoking, it's a variety of tobacco that they grow themselves. It's not cannabis.
Well, either way, it's probably some good stuff, because it they didn't call a peace pipe for nothing, man.
Even to bring this up could lead to my deportation from this country.
Man.
The death sentence here.
Well, don't get yourself thrown out or killed.
Well, seriously, they have a death sentence. If you bring cannabis into this country, they will execute you.
Dang.
And they will kill you for importing the cure for cancer.
Man.
And it's not the only country in the world that will do it. Saudi Arabia will put you in prison for bringing in ibuprofen.
Really?
Seriously. There's a couple of people that came in with Nurofen, which is a banned drug of ibuprofen, and they were locked up for it because it's on the restricted list. Now, it's probably not necessarily very healthy for you, but Thomas, you were talking about... somebody was talking about the pie in the sky. Well, the real pie in the sky is the belief that a doctor that doesn't even study nutrition is in any position to help somebody that's sick, when they don't even consider what they're putting in their bodies.
Most doctors here have to study nutrition as well. That's why they take 8 years of medicine before they get to actually be a doctor. It doesn't mean what they're learning is any good, though. Yeah, it doesn't mean it's any good. So,
my doctor studied medicine for 11 years. He practiced as a GP for 20 years. I asked him what he knew about nutrition, and he said nothing. We don't need it. We've got drugs.
That's ridiculous.
And I said, I'm already supposed to give you €50 every time I come to see you for you to tell me that you don't actually know how to cure me.
Well, like I said, the body's a chemistry set. Generally, I say every other person out there's chemistry is completely out of whack. If you got dark rings underneath your eyes, chances are you're lacking in iron or sleep or whatever. And so until you get control of your chemistry set that is your body, you're going to be sick. And that's why I think all this information, like that book Thomas is posted a link for, would be beneficial. Oh, yeah. And I'm going to put that link on the chat room or somewhere on the site where people can find it in the form of a button, click to this to go check that book out, because I think that's worthy information that needs to be addressed. But until you get control...
I was going to say, something else that might help people a lot, too, that you mentioned the dark rings under the eyes and not having enough nutrients.
Yeah.
Because you haven't gotten... You're not eating enough nutrients. It may not be that you're not... It's not that you're not eating enough nutrients. It's that you're eating too much sugar.
Yeah, that's...
If you eat too much sugar... Sugar is an energy source that requires nutrients in order to process it. So if you're eating what you should be eating in nutrients, but you're eating too much sugar... Your body is working in overdrive, consuming all those resources and leaving nothing behind for your cells to actually use to build things. So cut down on your sugar.
Nice.
Watch your sugar intake. Even if you're not diabetic, even if you're not having diabetic problems, still cut down, because we consume way too much sugar in America. Way too much. And it's all refined, so there's no good stuff in it. It's all just pure fuel. You wouldn't drink gasoline, so don't eat white sugar.
For the people out there who are into alternative living research, such as dietary and stuff like that, post some links up in the chat room to your version of the perfect diet so people can go out and try these. You know, if you try it for 30 days and it makes you feel good, that might be the diet for you. The holy grail of the perfect diet would be, when somebody takes crazy dual mindset in the chat room right there, you get a blood test to see what's lacking and what's too much in your blood, and then somebody work out a diet from that point on for you personally. But in the meantime, there's folks out there that's done a lot of research as far as alternative cures and medicines and stuff like that, and that's knowledge that not only would be beneficial now while everything's good, but imagine in an apocalyptic scene where you only had what you could forage around in your own natural environment to eat, your nutrition is going to be just as important during an apocalyptic situation as it would be during the normal good times. So,
Don't look for the Twinkies when the zombie apocalypse happens.
Yeah.
It'll slow you down. The zombies can catch you.
Now, I'll tell you what.
Woody Harrelson spent the whole film looking for Twinkies.
I know.
But guys, one more point. If you want some more, you mentioned the Twinkies, something I wanted to add a while ago. A good source of that titanium dioxide is the white powder on the donuts. You knock that white powder off the donuts and put it through a coffee strainer with some water, the sugar dissolves and leaves nothing but that very white, great titanium dioxide. And you can make little solar cells with it.
Cool.
If you need a solid, pure source you don't have to fool with, just go buy the pigment they use for paint. You can buy raw white pigment for paint without the actual body to go with it, and it's just pure titanium dioxide.
Cool.
That's the whitest white you're going to get.
Solar cells.
I was going to say, why do you think that they call fridges, microwaves, freezers, and all this sort of stuff white goods?
Huh. Never heard of that. Never even heard them called that.
If you're going to buy a fridge or a freezer or anything like that in Europe, they call it white goods. But what's in the paint that they paint on the side of a fridge and a microwave and a freezer?
Oh yeah, it blocks the RF.
It's titanium dioxide.
Blocks the RF because it is a metal, so...
Yeah.
That's cool!
If you want a supply of titanium dioxide, just get a load of old fridges.
I think you'd spend a lot more time than you would just going and working for the man to buy for a little while to go buy yourself a tub of pure titanium dioxide, though.
Yeah, but if you can't work for the man and you need a supply of it, you know where to get it.
Hey, if you can't work for the man, you can work for somebody who does work for the man. They're always wanting something.
Yeah.
So I can get titanium dioxide at a paint store, huh?
Because that's what I do. I work for people who work for the man. They buy my stuff, they go and work for, you know, whatever big business and get their money to pay me, and then I go back and, you know, go to those big businesses and buy my resources that I want.
I think we ought to throw the man in jail and just start paying attention to one another.
We're working on that. Hey, we're working on it. Just don't talk too loud about it. We want to let them know before it's time to do it.
Yeah,
well, myself and Shaziz, we have a deal. In the zombie apocalypse, he's going to wear the steel toe cap boots to boot the zombies, and I'm going to walk around with a dustpan and brush and clear up after it.
Cool. I like that.
Well, while you guys are doing that, I'm going to be finishing up my compound before this all happens, so I can have my treadmills outside facing toward my building. That way the zombies give me free electricity.
I just want everybody to know that I will kick a zombie in the jingle bells in a heartbeat.
Don't worry, you won't feel it.
Hey, it's the thought that counts, brother. Because where I come from, we got rules.
And where I come from in the zombie apocalypse, you're going to have Simply Steve's Mystery Meat Pie.
Ooh! Oh, I need that house.
Now, by the way, she says, I'm glad you didn't call them dingleberries.
No, jingleberries.
I heard somebody call them dingleberries. I'm like, you don't know what dingleberries really are, apparently. Yeah.
We call it crippling the nerdlies.
Yeah, what?
Oh, man. The proper name, Big on Big.
Guys, I actually did a recipe in a restaurant back in 1991 called Mexican Mountain Oysters.
Mountain oysters, yes.
No.
Yes. And we served it to over 300 people, and then we told them it was sheep's.
Gonads. That ain't happening. I'm not going to no restaurant and eating any jingle bells from any source. No, forget it. I'm not eating anything like squid, anything that gets up and walks across the plate. I'm not eating it. If it doesn't look good, I'm not eating it. If it If it stinks,
see, you can go out and look for some bark and some berries anytime you want, man.
Yeah,
you don't have to eat that stuff, man.
That's what I said. My wife was talking about feeding me hominy the other day, and that stuff's straight out of the devil's kitchen. I ain't eating that for if you pay $1 billion.
Hominy? Hominy?
Yeah.
Hominy is just corn.
I don't want to eat it. It's nasty.
It's basically boiled popcorn because they boil it under pressure and it pops.
Listen.
Like it does in the microwave.
I would rather go out and lick tree bark than eat hominy. All right.
Well, if it's birch, then you know you're good. The tree bark, you know, that's some tasty stuff.
It is. I've eaten it before. It is good.
Oh yeah. It's not without reason that they make birch beer, and it actually outsells root beer.
All right. Well, I'll go get some birch beer, but I ain't eating no hominy.
if you can just give me 10 seconds.
Go ahead.
What about mountain oysters?
10 seconds.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
Rocky Mountain oysters, yeah.
It'll turn you badly into Gonads the Barbarian.
Well, here we are. It is a well-known novelty dish in parts of America West and Western Canada, where cattle ranching is prevalent and castration of young animals is common. I don't think I need to say any more.
Well, listen. I've seen them hanging off the back of pickup trucks on the trailer hitch. I'm not eating them.
Well, they're made out of rubber, mate.
I don't care. I ain't eating them.
No, usually the ones that I've seen hanging off the back of trucks are made out of steel and chrome plated. So,
yeah, but that's only the rich redneck.
We've got a plate with two big round chunks of meat on it. He asked what they were, and the guy said it's the cojones of the bull that they killed in the arena that day. Well, that looks good. So let me ask. He said, "Well, they only kill one bull a day." So, but whoever's the first in line, you know, get the orders against them. So the next day, he made sure he was there when they opened the restaurant. He sat there all day until, you know, finally they told him, they just killed the deal. They should have the bullfight, and they had the cojones. So he said, "Well, I'll have that." And he brought it out. It was two little teeny tiny round pieces of meat on the plate. And he said, "What's this?" He said, "Well, sometimes the bull wins."
Oh. rest assured, I am going to be last in line. Anyway, on to the back to the show there. We're down to the last 10 minutes, and so since some people are long-winded, we got to start going around the table now, man. So, anybody want to go first and give out your YouTube and any pertinent information or tell people where they can get all the links to stuff that was discussed on the show and so forth and so on?
Sure.
I'll go.
Well, Larry in Dublin, they left. I know what Larry would say. Whatever you plan on, whatever you want to do, if you want to build something, just do it.
Yeah.
Get together. Don't think that you're not good enough, and don't think you're not good enough to get on the show. Just do it. Invent it. Whatever. If you want to do something with peace, do it. So I'll say for me, Muddy Muddy Mudman. Spell it any way you want. Put it in Google. It'll lead you to me. I am. And I'll send it off, I guess. Boomer could be the next in line.
Well, I'm agreeing with you totally and Larry. You know, we've discussed the fact that you can't take it with you. So there is only one way to truly live forever, and that's to do something that you'll be remembered good for eternity. So when you're envisioning these things or coming up with a good idea, like Larry says, do it. Don't look at the money end of it. Look at the fact that if you do something really great, people are going to remember you for years and you will live forever.
What, like Hitler?
Hey, if you go to Germany and you ask them what happened during the time that the Nazi regime was in power, they're like, nothing happened. Though it won't be long before he'll be forgotten too.
What? Not by the English.
Either way, moving right along. Who's next?
Well, I'd like to give a line from the Gospel according to Thomas. Don't wait for other people to fix your problems. There you go.
I like that one.
That's a good one. What about Thomas? What's your gospel?
networking, man. Work together, you know. Like I said, if you look around, Didon has started doing the virtual labs thing kind of in a small way, just pushing forward, working together on things and whatnot. So we got some movement forward on that. Start working together, you know. Find out what skills each other has and help each other out, you know. Trade, you know, work for work. Hey, I've got a mill. You've got a lathe. I need something turned. If you need something milled later on down the road, I'll pay you back by milling you something out and sending it back to you, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
Postal shipping is cheap compared to going down to your local metal shop and paying them, you know, $40, $50 an hour for them to make something, which, you know, they're going to take an hour just setting up to get ready for you.
All right.
Get somebody to do it for you just for the cost of shipping to you and maybe, you know, the $5 or $10 for scrap metal. You know, you're set.
Cool. So, essentially, you know, there's been a vast amount of information flowing on the Knights of the Round Table, and that's what it's been all about all along, and there's been a lot of really good comments coming up in the chat rooms, and, you know, a lot of people have got some information out of today's show that could help benefit them, and we just need to keep the ball rolling. It's easy to become one of the Knights of the Round Table. It's as simple as a Skype call in and bring some really good, respectful information to everybody around the world. And you can become an honorary knight just by showing up in the chat room and posting pertinent links and discussing between each other and meet new friends from all over the globe. We have an amazing opportunity. My buddy Steve, he's always talking about we got the vast amount of combined knowledge of all humanity at our fingertips, and right now would be the best time in history to use it, you know, learning all things about alternative energy, alternative medicine, alternative law, learning just things and meeting new friends all over the globe is one of the biggest pluses of the whole deal. Some of the best friends that I've ever seen in my life I've met due to this this thing we call the internet. And so if we just keep this going and the networks are growing like they've been doing, and you know, we can't go wrong. If we're ever going to change this world, the solutions are out there. All we need to do is bring them to the table and point people in the right direction for the information that they seek. I was at a church group yesterday, as a matter of fact, doing an alternative energy deal, and now there are people that know about these radio networks out there, and they know that they have access to people in wind turbines like Muddy Muddy Mudman, who does actual flux wind turbines. He also has knowledge in the Stirling engine, and he has knowledge in a bunch of other things. Raymond's on here. He's got all kinds of knowledge and things. Thomas, the same exact thing. All of these guys who joined around the Knights of the Round Table have done so much research in your life, and to put this combined knowledge together in one nifty little package for everybody to listen in on and come in and discuss and point out their things that they've discovered. You know, this is how we do it, folks. It's networking, like Thomas always says. It's networking. You start networking, and if you don't like our radio network or our radio show, then get out there and start your own, get a group together, and start making a difference in the world. Nothing gets done until you get off the couch and just simply do it. And so with that said, I'm going to say peace and love, and you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned for whoever's coming up next. I don't know because I haven't looked at the schedule. So with that said, thanks to all the honorable knights of the round table. Thanks to all the honorary knights out there in the chat room and all the people that are involved behind the scenes that keep these networks up and running. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to... Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, three dots when we're able. We do routines, to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we've given rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right. Right.
Fulfills the turbo, and the knights of the round table.